Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
HHC, hexahydrocannabinol, a man-made drug chemically similar to the active ingredient in cannabis. Amid growing health concerns, some organisations have called for it to be banned or classified as a Schedule 1 controlled substance, a move that would make its sale and distribution a criminal offence. However, despite these concerns, the HSE does not have a dedicated prevention campaign around HHC use. Joining me to discuss this is Mary Cannon, professor of psychiatric epidemiology and youth mental health at the RCSI, and Professor Colin O'Gara, Head of Addiction Services in St John of God's Hospital and Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at UCD. Thank you both very much for talking to us this morning. Mary, can I get the primer from you first, please? What is HHC? What kind of damage and harm is it doing? What is its legal status?
HHC is hexahydrocannabinol, so it's a semi-synthetic cannabinoid with like THC, which is tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the psychoactive component of cannabis. But because it's semi-synthetic, it has eluded our laws, our legislation, because our Misuse of Drugs Act, you know, sets out certain drugs and they mention THC. But because this isn't quite THC, it's just like THC, it has managed to be sold legally in this country for the past, I think, more than 2 years. So basically young people can go in, it's often sold in vape, kind of like a vape product, and buy this. And it's becoming a huge problem for us, for addiction psychiatry and for, you know, young people, mental health, in emergency departments, in psychiatric units. We're seeing a lot of psychosis related to this product.
Why is it so particularly harmful to young people?
Yes, this is an interesting question. Cannabis is particularly harmful for young people as well. It has more of an effect on their brain. It seems to affect the developing brain. So it causes, and it's more likely to cause psychosis in younger people than in older people. So essentially, HHC works the same way as THC. And we're seeing very high rates of it now. There's a study done in Galway showing that almost a third of the young people presenting with a first episode of psychosis had used this HHC, and it's now increasingly presenting to adolescent addiction services. In fact, recently, I think 25% of referrals in the last half of 2024 to an adolescent addiction service were related to HHC. It's second only to cannabis use in terms of adolescent addiction need for treatment.
Hard to generalise, but what are the recovery rates like, or are people permanently scarred?
No, people can recover. It brings on, in many cases, very acute psychosis with symptoms like paranoid delusions, agitation, with feelings of dissociation, perplexity. But it can settle if they stop using. But the problem is, many people keep using, and then they will get a relapse. And what we're afraid of is that it will be like with THC, with cannabis, that about a third of people who have cannabis-induced psychosis will then go on to develop a long-term schizophrenia if they keep using. So it's a risk factor for a long-term psychotic illness.
Legislation is being proposed now to make it a Schedule 1 drug, which would mean its possession and its use would attract much stiffer penalties than presently. Is that not something that the minister can just do by way of statutory instrument, or does it actually require primary legislation?
Yes, I know, and it's a bit of a mystery as to why this hasn't happened. I think things have changed. It hasn't been classified as, and I'm not a lawyer, but it hasn't been classified as a psychoactive drug for whatever reason. So it has managed to evade the Psychoactive Substance Use Act, which was the act that was brought in to shut down the head shops back in 2010, if you remember. So that was a very powerful tool, just saying any psychoactive substance, you know, is now banned. But this drug, for some reason, has not been classified as that. But the UN have recently officially classified it now on their list of their list of psychoactive drugs and harmful drugs. So that, I think, the government will have to act on this now.
All right. So we're behind the curve on that. In terms of health awareness, the HSE does not plan to launch a public information campaign around the use of this substance. Is one needed, Mary? Do they work?
They do work, and it is needed. I mean, the simple answer is. I can't understand. The College of Psychiatrists, to be honest, they spotted this was a gap, and in I think it was late 2023, they launched a campaign, a public awareness campaign, which was very effective. I mean, the media picked up on it. You know, it was in the newspapers, and I think, but you need a more sustained campaign. So, you know, I think this is why having this on the program this morning is really helpful, Philip.
Okay, Professor Mary Cannon, thank you very much. Professor Colin O'Gara, can I turn to you now? Are you surprised that this isn't already a Schedule 1 control drug?
Yeah, I am actually, Philip, and I think it's gone on for quite some time. I mean, in terms of at the coalface treating people with HHC, either addiction or psychosis, this has been an issue for quite some time. And I think it comes down to this issue of whether it has been classified as a psychoactive drug or not. And I think, to the best of my knowledge, that there has been some debate in the background as to whether it was a psychoactive drug or not. But clearly from our experience in clinical services, it is. And it is because we see the effects every day. This is not a benign drug that can be sold in colourful packages, either in vapes or gummies to kids. This is not something that realistically should be available for kids to walk into stores in Dublin city centre at the moment and buy, or go online and buy. You know, I mean, that just doesn't make any sense whatsoever to me. So it is a surprise, Philip, and to think that, you know, I have families basically sitting with me who are picking up the pieces of their child being, and when I say child, it might be an 18 or 19-year-old, because I don't see under 18s, but say a young man or woman who has been acutely affected, meaning they've, you know, they have a severe psychotic episode, and the parents are just questioning why it's legal.
Mary expressed the view there that a public information campaign is needed and that they do work. I've seen research from within the HSE suggesting that those kind of public agency-led interventions are the least successful forms of interventions in turning people away from drugs. Do you think they work?
I do, Philip, and I know the literature you're referring to. I mean, if you don't fund something properly and head it up with a just say no, mantra, it's going to drive young people away. Nearly 25 years ago, I would have been in London at a time when money was being pumped into sophisticated drug campaigns. One of these types would be a campaign called Just Talk to Frank, was what it was called. And these were highly, you know, very strong productions of, for instance, in cocaine, you know, a person going into a toilet cubicle and chopping, instead of chopping up cocaine, they start chopping up a brain. So you kind of strong imagery and very, very catching in terms of young people. So, like, it has to be sophisticated. It has to be something that, say, somebody on TikTok will look at and say, well, that makes sense. But I mean, a general kind of info share, just say no campaign, no, that's not going to work in my view.
Are our addiction services sufficiently equipped and resourced?
Well, I guess it's a postcode issue at the moment in terms of rolling out of services. I mean, if you try to access services in Sandyford or Bray, you're going to get access to what's called a community addiction team, or a CAT. And in certain locations in the country, these are effective. They have individual input. There's individual input there and group input. And you'll also get care pathways through to, say, for instance, psychology, clinical psychology and clinical psychiatry. In other areas of the country, that doesn't exist. If you look at opioids and the heroin addiction, or indeed codeine addiction, or over-the-counter preparations, in certain areas of the country, you'll have very well-established treatment services opioid substitution therapy services, as they're called, or OST services, which have been present for, you know, 30 years plus. In other areas of the country, they are, you know, they're not there effectively. So, you know, it's really about, again, it comes back to, you know, cocaine comes to mind when we talk about HHC. I mean, I know the topic is HHC today, but if are we going to do a public awareness campaign about cocaine, for instance, because it's so available? Do we have primary cocaine services available? Not really. So, like, it depends what drug you're talking about, and it depends then, you know, what's actually available at the moment.
Well, it does insofar as there are some drugs for which the primary problem is going to be one of addiction and some other health-related issues. But in the case of HHC, we're talking about having to treat young people for psychosis, and we know how poorly equipped and resourced our adolescent mental health services are in this country. So in that respect, does HHC present a particular and a unique and worrying challenge?
Yeah, it does. And I mean, that's a very good point in terms of trying to get help for somebody who's under 18 at the moment for psychiatry. There is no question that is difficult. But I suppose the differentiation, Philip, traditionally would be that if you had a HHC problem, you'd be diverted across to adolescent addiction services as opposed to mental health services. Now, there is a strong crossover. If you have addiction, you'll go to addiction services. If you have psychosis, you'll go to mental health services. But this raises the issue of dual diagnosis services. So what we need is a crossover between the two services. And there's been long calls for dual diagnosis services, not only in adult for adults, but also for kids. So that's even more specialized. So dual diagnosis adolescent services is what's needed. They are in the UK, that's for sure. And there's certainly one service, you know, in the country, a YODA service, which is headed by Dr. Bobby Smith. So we need more of those kind of, Professor Bobby Smith, we need more of those services across the country.
Colin O'Gara, thank you very much. Professor Colin O'Gara, St. John of God's, and before him, Professor Mary Cannon at the RCSI.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.